My last name is spelled, so my name is Steve Shimek, S-H-I-M-E-K. It's a good Czechoslovakian name. Are we ready?
We're ready. We're on.
All right.
You're
going
to have this up on the...
Yeah, I will.
Okay, good, because this is...
small.
Thank you.
My name is Steve Shimek, and I'm with Monterey Coast Keeper and the Otter Project. And then I'm also up here. There are several other environmental groups that have that I'm working together with. Before I kind of begin and start rolling into the slides, I want to address that issue of, you know, gosh, why couldn't we all come together just like 2004 and sing Kumbaya? And you know, I think the reason for that is because that group, that was the first waiver, and I have knowledge of this because Caitlin Gaffney is probably my best friend in the whole wide world, and she was on that group. And one of the things that she mentioned was, we put things aside. We deliberately said, no, this is too difficult. We're going to set it aside. It's easy to sing Kumbaya if you set the hardest issues aside. And we've decided to take those issues up in this order. And so that's a little background. So first of all, let's see. Let me figure out how to work this. You've seen many of these slides before. I am not a restorationist, as some people have said, you know, wanting to go in the Wayback Machine and get back here. But I do want to say that this is the lower Salinas River many years ago. Water, riparian vegetation, and fish.
That was me, fishing.
Yeah. I just turned 60, Russ. I'm getting up there,
too. A couple
too.
Days ahead of you. So.
Yeah, well. And here's some of the water that we have today. It's bad. It's really bad. And the practices that we have out there today, some of them are just atrocious. Some of them are really good, but some of them are really bad. This is runoff from, you know, into a ditch, and the water has just gone, you know, I mean, it's got a ton of nitrate in it. It's blooming. And we're just not respecting the range of beneficial uses that we once respected for water. And I think that that's led us to the problem that we have today. It was, in many of the agricultural areas, the only beneficial use that has been respected for water has been use for agriculture. And I think that, that part of the pushback right now is that many of the groups that I'm talking to are saying that there are other beneficial uses, habitat, recreation, drinking water. Those are values that are important, and those are values that this board protects. We also have problems with sedimentation. We've heard some stuff about, your numbers as far as stormwater are really bad, and you've got to do something different. You've got to do something. You've got to do something because we've got serious sedimentation problems that are flowing into our rivers and streams, clogging them, choking them, making them unusable for other beneficial uses. We haven't valued our riparian and wetland habitats. This is the Salinas River Channel. This was done, I don't know if it was done with or without a permit. I've been told that it was done with a permit. But you know, there's people that say, oh, defer to the other agencies. Well, this was apparently a permitted bulldozing of a river channel. Our water is suffering because of it. This is that same statewide report that was referred to earlier. And, Mr. Johnston, I do believe that it is skewed towards the problem areas. I don't believe that it is a sampling of just the problem areas, though. The Big Sur is part of the sample, the Carmel, many rivers that are clean. In other words, it's a snapshot with a little bit of extra emphasis on the problem areas. But when you look at this, 22% of our waters are highly toxic. 22% of those samples. Many of those sites are toxic every single time that they're sampled. Mr. Los Huertos said, well, you know, you can, the water quality will change over time. We're talking places that are sampled, and every single time they are toxic. It doesn't get much more cut and dry than that. I agree with Ms. Clary when she says, well, the alternative is that you could have no data. This is, again, you've seen this. I think Karen Wooster actually put this up. This is toxicity in the lower Salinas. This is toxicity in the lower Santa Maria. Arrows pointing up is getting worse. I don't see many arrows pointing down. This is nitrate in the lower Salinas. And this is nitrate in the lower Santa Maria. We've got problems. When we talk about the tiering system, I mean, I know that this is wishful thinking, but my thought was, you know, we've gone through all this kind of machinations to try and figure out who's in tier one, here's in tier two, here's in tier three. Let's just draw a circle around the lower Salinas and the lower Santa Maria and throw them all in tier three. That's our problem area. We know it. Frankly, that would be the most fair approach. But we've made some decisions through this process, whether it be to protect the small grower or whatever, that have led us to this tiering structure, which makes us rely on larger operations. That was a decision made long ago. We're living with it now. People are now calling, the same people that agreed to that are now calling it arbitrary. Yesterday, a report came out, and it was the Harder report. Yes? Mr. Farr brought up the Harder report, and excuse me, but are you suggesting that this is not new information? You actually said in the record that some of the things that were in this report were based upon the Los Huertos report, which wasn't in the record at all.
It appears that Mr. Schimmick wants to discuss the report, and I don't know how much you want to discuss it.
I think I've got three or four slides.
I prefer that you don't.
I guess I...
That's it. I mean, it's just best that we avoid it.
So the most recent information you don't want to allow into the record?
Well, it's not that. It's what is in the record is in the record. And so you just have to stick with that.
One more sentence?
Sure.
My one more sentence would be that to me, and I think what Mr. Jeffries was alluding to, was the fact that the entire intent of public comment is to bring you, in essence, new information. What is the point of having public comment?
Well,
if I'm not bringing it?
No, Mr. Schimmick, I would say it's not to bring us new information. It's to comment on what's in the record and what's being proposed.
Well, Mr. Young, yeah. What I had said earlier was that I agreed with Ms. Dunham that the report itself should not be in the record because it was not provided before August or whenever the cutoff date, but there is also in the provision of the water code that governs this kind of procedure that parties can provide rebuttal information and can provide information to support their statements. So it kind of depends on what Mr. Schimmick wants to talk about, but he's not proposing to put the report in the record, but there's been discussion about by Mr. Farr, Congressman Farr and others about this report, and it seems reasonable to let him at least talk about it a little bit, but I don't know how much he wants to talk about it. So,
where do you draw the line?
maybe to the extent that you're proposing to show slides that are actually from the report, be actually introducing part of the report, so it would be better to talk about the report without showing pages from the report.
I would be, I'm looking to the chair.
That's my suggestion.
I think that's reasonable.
Okay. Maybe, how are we going to do this? Click through them like Ms. Gulas-Huertas did, or what should I do?
Yeah, we're going to.
Do I'm asking for solutions.
Just click through them.
My suggestion is that we will make sure that the record does not include those slides as well, and you can say orally what you want to say.
Okay.
I mean, do you really need them?
I think I need them to rebut some of the things that have been said. In other words, some of the things that have been said are things such as, it's not agriculture that is the problem. And some of the things that have been said are that the nitrate problem is legacy and it's not getting worse, that we don't have data. You know, and some of the things that have been said are that water systems and things like that, and there's been not clarity on which water systems and stuff. And I think we can talk about what I want to talk about is the trends. I want to talk about where it's coming from. I want to talk about the fact that it is impacting many, many hundreds of thousands of people.
Sure.
Thank you, Tess Dunman. For the record, with respect to our objection, I would contend that what, as Mr. Shimmick has just described, what he intends to discuss is new evidence. And to me, that is a large demarcation between what we had done and what he is looking to put into the record. And because this is new evidence, technical information, and with an evidentiary being used in the matter of evidence in order to rebut that is why we would have an objection to its inclusion even in an oral format. This is a huge report. It's just been released, and no one has had the opportunity to review it in its entirety in order to actually rebut any of the information within it. Thank you.
I just want to add, just let me read from the regulations that apply to this type of proceeding.
Go ahead.
Can you speak up a little bit?
Sorry. Rebuttal testimony, generally.
And what are you reading from?
I'm reading from the State Water Board's regulations that apply to adjudicatory proceedings of the Regional Water Quality Control
Board. And which number? What section number?
It's section 648.4F.
F?
Yes. Rebuttal testimony generally will not be required to be submitted in writing, nor will rebuttal testimony and exhibits be required to be submitted prior to the start of the hearing. So, Mr. Shimmick described the purpose of his wanting to talk about that. So you would need to make a decision whether that is a reasonable rebuttal.
Well, I think
testimony.
His rebuttal testimony, it can come in, but still, I think the details of the report should not come in. I think if you want to draw alert as to conclusions in the report to support your position, I think that's fine.
Okay.
And likewise, Ms. Dunham, you have another 5 minutes of rebuttal time. You're going to be able to do what you want to in rebuttal, however you want to attack the report or use it. I don't know. I'm just trying to call the balls and strikes here, all right? This is not easy. Okay. So the details I'd like you just to leave out. But you want to tell us about the conclusions in the report to support your position? I think that's fair game.
I'm trying to parse through. I truly am.
I don't want to see tables from the report and that kind of evidence in detail, but if you want to give us conclusions from the report that are supporting your rebuttal testimony to counter what has been said. Okay.
Avert your eyes. I will slide. I don't know what
Go
I'm
ahead.
Supposed to do.
Go ahead. Just go through it.
You want me to go through it?
No. Go
I'm trying to figure out.
Okay,
I truly
now summarize your.
Okay,
your
thank you.
God, the picture of a dead daughter.
My summary of what I had hoped to show you and illustrate to you was is that nitrate pollution in ground wells and in wells, both drinking water wells and in irrigation wells, is widespread and supported by many studies, including recent studies. The other thing that I want to suggest to you is that there's information out there about inputs and outputs, and that material, the inputs, is by far the vast majority is agricultural, irrigated ag, not cattle, not, it's irrigated ag inputs. There is information, both recent and old, that shows that agriculture is the problem when it comes to nutrient loading into surface waters and into groundwaters. You've seen this slide before. And this slide is of what's happening in our environment. Our environment, there are animals that are dying. And they are dying because nutrient-rich water is blooming in freshwater systems, washing out to sea, and killing those animals. These are problems in our environment. One of the big changes that has happened within me as a result of this process is a greater appreciation, frankly, for the human impacts of this pollution. This was a study that was done earlier, and this study basically talked about, and I've used this slide before, and this has been in the record before, that what you've got is that this is about the San Joaquin Valley, but the same information is essentially true, and we all know it, for the Salinas and Santa Maria Valleys. People are getting hurt while you delay. The environment is degrading while you delay. I truly think that. This is a problem. And it's got to be addressed. I'm going to click through one more slide. The Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board sent us a letter back in 2008 and said, here are the things that we want to do with this order. And it was I won't read it. I just want everybody to read it here. And it is my belief that we can all stand back and we can kind of salute the flag and say that these are all good things. And yet, when I was part of a panel discussion just last week, I think it was, an agricultural representative said, these are the things that got us mad. This is apple pie. This is what you are sworn to protect. Aquatic habitats, toxicity, nutrients, people's health. This is important stuff. This is what you should be protecting. But I guess we can't agree on this. While Congressman Farr's comments, you know, he stood up and he talked about how important this is, and while I respect his comments and I take them to heart, this process is happening under Porter Cologne. It's not happening under Clean Water Act, and he's just another guy once it turns into this process. And I know he's not, but he should be. This is not a federal process. This is what we should be focused on. I've also shown this before. This is in a staff report that was September. And this basically says, so in other words, if you stand back and you say, okay, that previous slide was apple pie, then the only conclusion that you can come to is that the only proposals that serve up that apple pie are the environmental proposal that I was part of and a staff proposal. Those are the only ones that do it. The other proposals do not. there was an opinion, I assume Francis wrote it, I'm not sure, but that was in the staff report, which was a legal analysis of the ag alternative. And basically it says that it's not legal for a couple of different reasons. One reason was it creates disparate groups and inequities. The other reason that it basically says is because it doesn't comply with water code, which was one of the things that we were talking, that you were discussing early. There, monitoring is required, and monitoring must be reported. It says that in code. Ms. Dunham left that half of the sentence out. It also says that monitoring must be appropriate, and I'm using plain language here, but must be appropriate to actually assign, you know, who's responsible. It does talk about cooperative monitoring, but it addresses cooperative monitoring in the sense that it still must be scaled in a way that you can assign what the who is the problem. She left that out. That's important stuff. Many growers, Bob Martin has become a good friend of mine, and many growers are committed to good water quality, and he's one of them. But Farmers for Water Quality is doing a number of things that I think is unfortunate. First of all, they have actually said that their strategy, some of them have actually said that their strategy is to get the 2004 order back. I maintain, yes. And on their website, it actually says that their plan is to petition and ask for a stay. It says that. So my point being, if the end game here is to go back to 2004, how are you going to get the good ideas of Mark Los Huertos and Ross Clark? There will be no incentive for those ideas under the 2004 order. If we have good projects stripped out of the frame of that, you know, thing that says, okay, you're not going to have to report, I think we'll have a success. That is encapsulated in the current order. It allows for these projects to come forward and be proposed, be evaluated, and be approved. It's in there. I want Ross Clark's engineered wetlands. Frankly, I want Mr. Los Huertos to have some successful projects. They need to be monitored. They need to be written down. They need to be properly scaled. They need to be properly committed to. But I want those projects. The staff proposal allows those projects. The two most important letters that have been submitted so far, in my opinion, are the Monterey City letter, which basically says, why in the heck should we do stuff, if stormwater stuff, when ag is getting a free pass? I think that's an important question, and I hear that from ASBS people as well. It makes it impossible for you to govern and regulate if you do not regulate the biggest discharger. The second most important letter, I think, is the DPR letter. I'm not DPR, California Department of Public Health, where they said they think that this is a good idea, they think the problem is serious, they think you need to go ahead and pass this order. So you have a municipality standing back and saying, why are you picking on us when you're giving somebody else a free pass? And that letter is in my slides, so you can read it. And then you've got California Department of Public Health saying the problem is serious, you need to go ahead. The environment is suffering. People are at risk. You need to pass this order. You need to pass it this meeting. I can't stress that enough. I've got a ton of passion for this, but this has gone on long enough. if you think that between now and September, the political season, it's going to get easier for you to pass something in September, you're crazy. I have been called into departments and agencies that I've never been called into before to talk about this stuff. It's going to get harder in September. This is your moment. The time is now. The staff proposal has been watered down enough. The staff proposal allows Mr. Los Huertos and Mr. Clark to do their projects. Their projects are good. They can be allowed in the staff proposal. Let's move ahead. Let's start protecting the environment. Let's start protecting people. Thank you. Does anyone have any questions?
Mr. Delgado and then Mr. Johnston.
Steve, the point on the monitoring, you said it. Monitoring has to be recorded, and it has to be reported. And it has to be appropriate to assign who is responsible. And is that specified in the water code sections that, or in the NPS policy, that it has to be reported to an individual basis?
No, but first of all, I'm not a lawyer, Mr. Delgado, and I think Mr. Alley, when he comes up and speaks in his 3 minutes, will cover this directly. But I read the water code, and at least the way I read it is it says that water quality monitoring results will be reported. And there's specific meaning within that. I don't think it says a water quality report will be reported. I think it says water quality results will be reported. And I think that that's an important distinction. And I just take it as plain face. The second thing is that I think that it does say, and again, I'm offering plain English kind of reading of this stuff, and I'm sure lawyers can read different things in different ways. The way I read, and I believe it's the preceding one or two sentences, is it basically says that yes, third-party monitoring is appropriate, and that's how we got the third-party monitoring. Water Quality Preservation, Inc. is a third party. They did the monitoring program, and then they reported the results to the regional board and to the public. And I think that it's that transparency that leads to accountability. And it's my belief that the only way that what Mr. Clark and what Mr. Los Huertos wants to do, what they want to do, the only way that they get to do it is if there's the backstop of good regulation. Now, the point of, is there a way around individual reporting? I believe that if a project comes forward, and let's just say it's an engineered wetland, because that's easy to think of. Let's just say an engineered wetland comes forward and they say, okay, we're going to take care of the discharge of these 8 farms. And so you've identified the 8 farms, and those people have signed on. I think you can have water quality monitoring that moves off the edge of the farm and becomes efficacy of the project monitoring. You still have accountability because those 8 farms, have signed on the dotted line. You still have accountability, and you're still doing monitoring that measures how well they are performing. That's my solution of moving off the edge of the farm.
In that example, the monitoring would be above, inside, and below the wetland treatment?
I think inside is so I think above and below. I don't know about inside.
Okay.
Mr. Johnston.
I was actually curious about what you were saying about monitoring, too. And were you applying that to groundwater monitoring as well, that groundwater monitoring needs to be reported and needs to be sufficient to assign accountability to individual operations?
I think that there's additional. So, again, I'm going to throw in the caveat that I'm not a lawyer. But I think that there is additional law on water quality monitoring that basically the location of the well cannot be reported. And so, and I agree that the individual people, that could lead to the location. So in other words, as I understand it, what that's moved to is kind of a quarter by quarter mile square, and you got to report within the square somehow. That's the way it's been interpreted. So there's additional law about that.
As a practical matter, not a legal matter, one of the things I've been thinking about is aggregated groundwater monitoring. As long as it's what we need, the Regional Water Quality Control Board from groundwater monitoring, is to really understand what's going on down there. And knowing the results from underneath an individual farmer's farm doesn't necessarily assign accountability, because that could be from a lot of different sources. Does that stuff move sideways?
I agree.
When we're doing groundwater. So one of the concepts that I've been thinking about and talking about with staff is aggregated groundwater monitoring, as not necessarily every single well, not necessarily every single farmer, as long as it gives us a fine enough detail, geographic, and it's really a three-dimensional geographic detail, to understand what's going on down there in terms of nitrates and set some baselines. Do you see a problem with that?
Not in the way you've described it. The cautions that I would have, the one caution is, I don't think that all groundwater is old groundwater. I think some groundwater responds very quickly. The San Gerardo experience taught us that San Gerardo, as I've heard it told, is when the field went fallow above it. And this could have been about the well, you know, backflows in the well or something. But when the field went fallow, the water quality improved. It was just that fast. So I think that as an approach, I agree with you. I think that there are instances where you're going to want to know the efficacy of what's going on above.
I just have to say, it could well have been at San Gerardo that it was the field four farms over going fallow that did that too. I mean, I understand there was a time connection to the fallow season.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you want to? Yeah. Right. So here's water code section.
Well, okay. You're done.
Unless there's any other questions for me.
There aren't any. I mean, I look both ways.
But excuse me, Chair, if he has a water code.
I'm going to call him next. And I'll let him give us the water code section in his presentation.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Trying to be one step ahead of
you.
Okay, thank you. All right. So that concludes the presentations that had asked for additional time with a lot of other people mixed in who had to leave early. And so what we're going to do now is, I think I have about 50 cards at 2 minutes each. That's, you know, 100 minutes. If we figure 2 hours to complete just this portion, we're going to probably end tonight at that point. It's too much, I think, for us to sit up here and be able to have staff take some time to review Ms. Dunham's presentation, which I want them to have a chance to do, so we can have a discussion about it. I would propose that perhaps we just continue this first thing in the morning, and we would go right to staff's presentation or recommendations on what they've heard. Ms. Dunham would have her 5-minute rebuttal, and then the board could.
She has the rebuttal first, and then staff's recommendation.
Okay.
Yeah. Get used to it.
All right.
But I like your
process.
Okay. Also, we have folks who will be showing up for the regular agenda items tomorrow. I think we should take care of them and then take this up again.
Okay. How's that going to work?
Well.
Huh?
It'll work well.
It'll work well. Okay. It'll work well, I'm told. So that's what we're going to do with this. But everyone that's still here is going to speak so we can listen, and then we're going to break, and then we're just going to have dinner, and that's it for tonight. So we will now proceed
with our speakers.
He had a request here.
Yes. Okay, and your name? Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
You may want to say where the meeting is going to be tomorrow.
That's a great question.
It was Hector Hernandez's question.
Yeah.
I can't take credit for it.
Yeah. Where's it going to be?
So the meeting tomorrow, and to clarify, I was suggesting that we would take care of our action items tomorrow first, because we have people be showing up for that as a noticed meeting, and then the board would take up this issue. It's at our office conference room, which is 895 Arrow Vista. The address is in the agenda notice for continuation of tomorrow's meeting. Regular meeting starts at 8:30. But like I said, we'll take care of the action items tomorrow first.
Do we have an approximate sense then of when the ag folks can expect to be back? I don't particularly want to get people here at 9 if we're not going to get to them until 1 in the afternoon.
Right. I'm the optimist. I'd say there wouldn't be any need to show up till what, 10:30?
Yeah, it's a guess.
That's a guess.
Know, and if you show up at 10:30, and we may have already started. So it's just a guess. But I'd say that's a reasonable guess.
At least 10. And the hope, Mr. Chairman, again, would be that you would conclude the public comments tonight, right?
That's what we're going to do.
Right.
Right. Okay. Mr. Schmidt.
Hotel room, or you take it up tomorrow afternoon and we go home and come back. Because while I truly enjoy San Luis Obispo and it's a wonderful tourist town, I didn't come prepared to enjoy the sights while you take up your action items if you're not going to get to this until 4 in the afternoon tomorrow.
We're not going to start this at 4 o'clock. I'll tell you that.
Well, you could pick a time certain that it wouldn't start before.
Yeah, well,
and then, you know.
Yeah. All right. Roger.
Not before 10.
Not before 10, but the action items are going to take us beyond 10 o'clock, aren't they? Basin plan?
But Mr. Chair, there's some items that we don't have to take action on tomorrow. Put those off.
Right. Michael, the ones that we need to do tomorrow, is 10 o'clock an accurate estimate to get through?
Actually, I think Roger's in a better position to answer that than I am. I was focused on today.
Initially, I said 10:30 to make sure that we don't start before. I was saying 10 that we wouldn't start before then, but I think 10:30 is more realistic.
Okay.
Yeah.
So 10:30.
Right.
Yeah, so you can just say that it will not begin before 10:30.
We will not begin this item.
I look forward
before
to paying the lodging tax. Thank you.
We appreciate it.
Okay. All right. Come on up, Ms. Whitaker, and then we're going to go to Nathan Alley. And is Mr. Merkley still here? Yes, okay, you'll be next. And then Kay Mercer. Go ahead. Gina Whitaker, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Pleasure to address the board. My name is Gina Whitaker. I represent a voice from the faith community, Unitarian Universalism in particular. I'm not a farmer. I'm not a regulator. But I believe the most important voice that the religious community can bring to this discussion is that safe, affordable, and accessible water is a basic right for everyone. Much of the population that will be affected by your decision today is made up of poor Latino migrant agricultural workers. I'm not sure they're represented here today. Traditionally, these populations have been marginalized in many ways, but their health is as important as the health of any population on the Central Coast or in the Central Valley. As Unitarian Universalists, it's our moral imperative to support clean, safe water as a basic right for any community, regardless of its socioeconomic status or ethnicity. The responsibility to protect water safety does not lie with health departments or municipalities. It lies squarely on the shoulders of this board. This past weekend, I had the privilege of attending a moving film about the life and work of Aldo Leopold, American conservationist. Dr. Leopold wrote about developing a land ethic, living with the land rather than merely on it. In this dilemma, I believe we need to carefully examine our land ethic as it relates to our use and abuse of our drinking water supplies. Please do the right thing today or tomorrow in voting for the most effective and protective waiver possible and avoid further delays. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Okay, Nathan Alley, then Danny Merkley, Kay Mercer, Darlene Din.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to scoot down a little bit. My name is Nathan Alley. Thank you so much. That'll be better for my posture. My name is Nathan Alley. I'm an attorney with the Environmental Defense Center. I've been working on this issue for quite some time, and I'm looking forward to a potential resolution tomorrow. We're here for two reasons. The old waiver has expired. It did so almost 3 years ago. And as your staff and others have pointed out, the old waiver is no longer adequate to protect water quality, and we need to improve it. So with those two things in mind, I once again urge you to take some action tomorrow to vote specifically for the staff proposal, but at the very least, please keep the ball moving forward. One thing I think we can all agree on is that we want to improve water quality. One thing we haven't agreed on is that all of the talking we've done in the last 3 years hasn't gone anywhere to directly improving water quality, and it's time for the rubber to meet the road. That being said, as I mentioned in my comments in February, once you make a decision, we're very happy to look forward to the next waiver. It's 3 or 4 or 5 years down the road. We might as well start getting working on it immediately, and we stand ready to do that. There are a lot of good ideas in this room, a lot of good proposals that may have some merit, and we'd like to see them potentially move forward. We don't want to spend the next 6 to 9 months talking about them. We want to do something now. That's really my message. I will very briefly address the questions that were raised earlier. I'll just quote the water code, what I believe that Mr. Shimmick was referring to earlier. The first thing is simply that, I'm going to quote, monitoring requirements shall be designed to verify the adequacy and effectiveness of the waiver conditions. That's what he was getting at. The monitoring conditions must be such to actually verify. And if I may just take one more second, to answer the previous question. Yes. So we agree with counsel's analysis of the legality or illegality of the ad proposal, but I think one of our biggest sticking points is this, again, requirement. Monitoring results shall be made available to the public, and it's the scenario where you are aggregating the monitoring results and then reporting them that we feel runs into legal problems. Monitoring in the aggregate, as Mr. Johnston mentioned earlier, might be a different scenario. But in specific, the idea of monitoring, collecting those results, messing around with them, and then presenting them as a whole, we believe does not follow the letter of the law. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Danny Merkley, Kay Mercer, Darlene Din, and Norm Groot, Kirk Schmidt.
Chair, before we go forward, can I have a point of clarification with our counsel?
Yes.
Here?
Yeah. You are.
The gentleman just mentioned the 2004 order is expired. It has been continued. Is that not correct?
Yes. The board renewed it for a certain period of time, and then the executive officer has renewed it. And Mr. Alley and his clients have filed a petition with the State Water Resources Control Board challenging the executive officer's extension of the waiver. So I think he's just stating his legal opinion about that.
Well, I didn't want the folks think out here that order had expired.
No, it's still in effect. And
thank you.
Okay, Mr. Merkley.
With the exception, Danny Merkley, California Farm Bureau. With the exception of mustaches, I believe less is more. So I will be extremely brief and just comment on the fact that all the staff time, all the time that has been expended to get us to here is simply a result of a flawed process. Not necessarily any one person's fault, but it is a flawed process that has caused us all to bump around like a bunch of blind dogs in a meat house. And this is why every single day I'm in the legislature, I'm hearing criticisms and snide remarks about the regional water quality control boards among legislators and legislative staff. And that concerns me. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Kay Mercer, then Darlene Dinn.
Before I begin, I had a request from a member of the audience if we could remove photos of Mr. Schimmick's presentation. That
I hadn't looked at it in 20 minutes until you mentioned that. Now I'm looking at it again.
Sorry. Oh. Okay. Hello, my name is Kay Mercer, and I, in preparing comments, I was reviewing past letters from the past 3 years. In my letter on April 10th, I identified 10 categories of program deficiencies, 5 flaws of the monitoring requirements, and 6 areas of data deficiencies with the proposed draft order. Since then, staff has addressed only one of the program deficiencies, and that was to scale back buffer requirements. Now, granted, scaling back on the number of Tier 3 growers did reduce the acute impact, but the number of the Tier 3 growers cannot be verified, and there is considerable staff discretion to add more growers during the tier. Hence, my criticism stand. It is assumed that the growers will implement practices. Mark Los Huertos talked about how we don't have sufficient practices. March 9, 2011, I sent a letter to the board basically quantifying the positive things that growers have done, and that was, I used 3 lines of evidence to corroborate that information. I also identified 11 barriers to management practice implementation and development. This information was considered to be credible enough that it formed the basis for a book chapter that was published by the American Chemical Society. As you move forward, you may want to go back to that and talk about why are we having so much difficulty matching management practices with our problems. The bottom line to my review was that in spite of presentations, the stakeholder input has not necessarily been reflected in the changes in the order. So the last thing I want to say is what if the waiver process was improperly conducted, the point source approach fails to deliver, there's not enough technical capacity, what then is the board's legacy? Please consider Mark Los Huertos' presentation and proposal as you make your decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Darlene Dinn, then Norm Groot, Kurt Schmidt, Michael Marsh.
A little taller, sorry. Good afternoon, board members. First of all, I'd like to open my comments with everyone deserves the right to an access of safe and clean drinking water, and no one in agriculture has ever made any other statement than that. Why the coalition approach will meet water quality improvements, from my point of view, is there's been a lot of discussion on-farm monitoring meeting water quality improvements, and I just want to hit one point that really it hits to the heart of some of this challenge on monitoring. Farming is fluid, and we have multiple master leases, and then we have subleases. We flip and rotate with berries and fallowing and vegetables, and some will be Tier 2, some will be Tier 1, some will be Tier 3 growers. Part of why Dr. Los Huertos' work is so important, because it's an approach in which you'll have trend analysis and you'll tie it to a systems approach, where the staff's approach, while they were trying to deal with issues, the tiering system inherently is flawed. If you have a strawberry grower that's maybe a Tier 2 and flips in with a vegetable grower the next year that's 3 that has different, maybe you fallow 1 year, maybe you do another crop, you hit a Tier 1 in there, over a 10-year period, you may have 1 or 2 years sporadically by two different operators of monitoring. Explain to me why that data has value. It's in a vacuum. It has no basis to cause and effect of actually do boots on the ground improvement. The other issue I wanted to let you know, I personally have spent a lot of time with the environmental community and in different aspects of conservation, community, and whatnot. And I think working in teams is really helpful. I learn from them. I appreciate working with labor. I'm sorry that at this stage that one of my best ally partners, advocate, other side, I can't sit at the table with. And that would be really helpful to make it happen, make the legacy to improve this, and please support the Mark Los Huertos report. And thank you all for your deliberation.
Thank you, Ms. Dim. Norm Groot and Kirk Schmidt.
Good afternoon. My name is Norm Groot, G-R-O-O-T. I'm the executive director for Monterey County Farm Bureau. And I think we all want the same thing here, and we're all trying to get to that point. But there are so many issues involved in this ag order that remain in question, and I just want to point out a few of those. There's conflicting data sets that mischaracterize water quality, particularly in the Salinas Valley, and particularly in groundwater. There's widely varying estimates as to costs, as how farmers will be impacted, and how much it will cost them. There's unachievable targets for compliance, not based on science or sound or proven BMPs. There's prescribed buffers that are interpreted as the only option that farmers will have. And operators have been the most proactive in the last 10 years and have improved water quality will be penalized the most simply because of their size, and they'll end up in Tier 3. And obviously, creativity is being stifled through this process. The regulated community is here telling you that this won't work and sets us up for failure. We have a proposal that is widely supported within our community and will achieve water quality improvements. Instead of regulating water quality in every ditch and retention pond, let's presume that there's a larger picture here, that of watershed water quality that can be achieved through growers cooperatively working together to manage solutions. Individual monitoring and reporting does not achieve cooperative solutions. Please consider the ag alternative and include it in the agricultural order so that growers have a choice in how they manage their water quality improvements. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Groot. Kirk Schmidt.
Thank you. Hello, I'm Kirk Schmidt, S-C-H-M-I-D-T. I'm the executive director of the Central Coast Water Quality Preservation. Preservation, Inc. conducts the cooperative monitoring program on behalf of agriculture for the present waiver and the future waiver. And we have been working with the staff in detail and repeatedly since 2005. Starting in August of last year, we started working with staff to see if we could get the adoption of the MRP for the Cooperative Monitoring Program to be enacted so that we could start that program this January. It took us 6 months between August and January to work out the details so we could get it started in time. We have not commented on the scope of the present draft, but we have commented on monitoring issues. And you have a very difficult monitoring program envisioned in Tier 2 and Tier 3. It's difficult to apply. If you have a 200-acre farm, you may have 20 10-acre plots, each farm 2.5 times per season. That's 50 plots. It's difficult to see how the farmers will have time between now and October, which is when the waiver calls for the MRP, which is the monitoring program for individual monitoring, to be enacted if you adopt the waiver now. The dilemma is that no matter how farmers read this, they still have to interact with staff to come up with a monitoring program that is consistent with what staff envisions. It means that there has to be lots of communication. This has been difficult during this period of time because there has been an inability for anyone to communicate in writing with staff because of the prohibition in writing about the waiver. However, that also puts the farmers behind the curve as far as the ability to develop a monitoring program that could be in place in October. It's very important that staff and growers have an opportunity to consult with each other on the scope of the Tier 2 and Tier 3 monitoring in time to get this rolled out so there's certainty about what they're expected to do. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments.